an important topic, but we have to first complete last week's topic. It seems to be happening on a regular basis. We were discussing last week Aliyas Nashim LaTorah, women getting Aliyas in what they call partnership or egalitarian minyanim, whatever the names they may have. We explained that it cannot be done, contrary to the view of certain figures who have written recently that it can be done. And we had mentioned the Sefer Abatim, which I subsequently saw, who has a unique view about it being permissible and not in the shul context, which is not accepted by anybody else. And we saw a comparison to Ir Shekula Kohanim. There's a place where everyone is a Kohen, where in such a case, according to the Marami of Rutenberg, women may receive certain aliyahs to the Torah, which is itself not accepted. And number two, that's what we're afraid of what we call Pegam HaKohanim, that the Kohanim may be blemished in the sense that they may be viewed as non-Kohanim. Here, according to certain authorities, is an issue of what they call Kavod, which does not rise to the same level as Pegam.
It's very important to understand that we're discussing a very serious matter over here, a prohibition. It's not merely a stringency or a custom. And the idea of mechila, forgiving, the tziva could be mochel on its covered, would not seem to apply in this type of a situation. The Bach says it doesn't help. Why? For two reasons. One, it includes also kavod shamayim, the honor of Hashem. And number two, if every tzibur could forego its honor, the entire enactment of the rabbis would be worthless. There'll be pressure. You know how it works. We just forgive, 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 forgive. So on these bases, the Bach says it would not work. And as Rabbi Professor Shokelman writes in his Maimer, there's no one that we found in the classical literature who explicitly disputes that which the Bach states explicitly. Nobody. There are other cases, yes, there are other cases in which there's an idea of kovod hatzibur which can be, hatzibur can't forego. For example, you're not supposed to roll a Sefer Torah in the middle of davening. So that's why we have to have two Sefer Torah, one to read one Kriya and another Kriya.
Or three.
Or three sometimes, that's correct, three Sefer Torah, which means they quote hatzibur. There's not enough Sefer Torah, they forgot, etc., that the hatzibur can forego its kavod. Because there, it's a lower level of violation. It's what they call it. It's Torah HaTzibur. It's the bother. It's a lack of respect for the time of the community. So then, the authorities say there can be a mechila on the part of the Tzibur. Contrast that, where there's a serious prohibition, which you cannot say we can just forego it like this. It's not exactly the same thing. So therefore, we accept the Bach. We don't find anybody who explicitly disagrees. And it has nothing to do with the status of a woman in general, which somehow it's got mixed into, as we often find in these matters. And aside from all that, there's minig Yisrael halacha, against what's written in the original sources, and especially in the shul, and it cannot be changed, and you cannot make new takonas in this area. Very, very strong. The most egregious point, which is addressed explicitly in this Maimon by Professor Shokelman, is that which is written by Professor Sperber, which he writes, while there are two conflicting values. One is kavod hatzibur, which is certainly a value, and one is kavod habrios, which is the dignity of people. And the dignity of people is certainly more important, argues Rav Daniel Sperber, more important than the, we'll call the kavod hatzibur.
That was around already in the time of the
So I'm going to read you a one line. I feel I have to read you. This is what I'll end with this because I want to get to the new topic. But for those who want to look it up in that article which I started quoting last week, called Aliyas Nashim B'Torah Me'ez Eli of Shochetman, which appeared in Shana B'Shana, I'm just going to read one page, and that page is page Shin Yud Beis. Just one page. I'm going to read you some significant headlines. He says, "Kavod Habrios." How can you say Kavod Habrios? Quote. In other words, kavod habrios means a person's not dressed properly or not dressed at all. So you have to make sure that they're taken care of and they don't have to run out of a house in the middle of the night if they're a kohen or something like this. There are ways of human dignity. This person has to clean himself on Shabbos in certain cases, so we allow kavod habrios. Because it's human dignity, cleanliness, modesty, human values, which are universal. Universal human values. That's the only place you'll find in the Gemara, kavod habrios. Here, The Kavod HaBrios is that the women aren't happy with Takanas Chazal. I quote, Sheretanosan Shalanoshim Haroos Atman Nifgos. They view themselves as being somehow hurt because they cannot read the Torah. Is that they are hurt mitakonas chazal, that women cannot get an aliyah in the Torah. And the expression of the Gemara, it's a good expression, Godol Kavod HaBrios Shedochel Kolosus HaBashabatorah, means that if you have an obligation to fulfill a derabbanan, a rabbinical mitzvah, and it contradicts what we call a disgrace or a lack of human dignity, so then we give the favor to human dignity. Which means is that derabbanan mitzvah on one hand, and circumstances which came about, how a person's not dressed, a person's not clean, a person is ill, as the case may be. Just circumstances which have nothing to do with the mitzvah itself. He gives an example. Someone finds he's wearing shatnas derabbanan. So he doesn't have to get undressed in the middle of the street. He can go into the house and get undressed there, because it's a rabbinical prohibition, and to be naked in the street is a lack of human dignity. Okay, that's fine. Kavod HaBrios, which happens to exist in this circumstance, is more important than a rabbinical prohibition. That's fine. Here, there's no contradiction between a particular circumstance on the one hand and, listen very carefully now, a particular circumstance on the one hand and the feelings of an individual on the other hand. No! The individual feelings are hurt by the very rabbinical enactment. So if the feelings are hurt by the very rabbinical enactment, it's impossible to say that the feelings of that person supersede and overrule the rabbinical enactment. This is a very obvious point to me, but I like to quote things which are printed, so you can look it up. Page Shun Yud Beis, in Shana B'Shana, by Eliab Shochetman. With this, I rest my case. I'm now going to start the new topic for this evening. A very important topic. The important topic is modesty in dress. A hot topic, even though it's been discussed many times before in many different circumstances, it always bears repetition and review. You all have with you, I think there are some a few additional copies at the end. How much you have a copy, I hope. Now you can look on with your neighbor. A two-sided copy. One side is Rabbeinu Asher. We're going to start with that. Rabbeinu Asher is the Rosh. It's important to know whose words you're reading. Rabbeinu Asher is considered one of the preeminent rabbinic authorities of the 13th century, and his words have a tremendous impact, not only because he was so great himself, also because, you know, it depends who your family is. His son was Rabbeinu Yaakov, son of the Rosh, who wrote the Tur. The Tur is the forerunner of the Shulchan Aruch. So the Rosh is extraordinarily, placed in the system of rabbinic law, not because of his own greatness, because he happened to have the son who wrote the book. He wrote the famous Tur, for which the part of the Shulchan Aruch is based. Every word he says that requires careful scrutiny. And I chose the Rosh instead of the Gemara itself, because it's just more economical in terms of getting everything copied. So we're going to read the Gemara together. It's on top page, it says on top, Nun Dal. We just read a brief excerpt. Omar Yitzchak, Tefach Be'isha Erva. Is everyone with me? It's the top line on page Nun Dal. I'm going to read slowly. What does a Tefach mean? A fist. What does a fist mean? A fist? It means she can't let her fist out? She has to wear gloves? Is that what the Gemara means? What do you think? No. You don't have to wear gloves. That's ridiculous. It's a Tefach, for those who study Gemara, is a quantity which is found throughout Shas. A tefach is found in the laws of Tumah and the laws that much. Presumably it's a tefach square. A tefach by a tefach. The isha in a woman is erva. It's considered to be something which is erva is a very hard thing to translate in a precise way. We'll see in a second what it means. So instead of giving a translation, let's give the facts of the case, which is more important than a translation. Lemai hilchasa, asks the Gemara. With respect to what is the Gemara discussing this issue? Ilema lista kuleba are referring to the prohibition of a man to stare, to gaze upon the nakedness of a woman. What? You're permitted less than the size of a fist squared? Not true. The Gemara tells us, even etzpektane shalisha is prohibited. Now, why anybody would want to look at the finger of a woman with some kind of a intention to enjoy the beauty of her finger is beyond me, frankly. But I guess I'm not an expert in what attracts people. But if, in theory, a man is attracted to the beauty of a woman's pinky, he is prohibited from gazing upon that pinky. That's what we see in the Gemara. So you can't tell me until a tefach is allowed. Even a pinky is not allowed. Continues the Gemara. The fourth line. Gemara says, no. Ha b'ishto l'kriyashma. Ha b'acheres. A woman, not your wife, is a prohibition to gaze. It's your own wife. There are no prohibitions about looking at your wife. Ah, that's all the time. Except when you're reciting the Shema. When you're reciting the Shema, if your wife is sitting right in front of you, and you're saying the Shema, then it depends. If there's a tefach exposed, you may not say the Shema. If less than a tefach, you may say the Shema. But we're not discussing a prohibition of gazing upon it. It's your own wife. You follow what's happening? We had to find a case where there's no prohibition of gazing in order to get to the point where it's a tefach, and it only has relevance to Kriya Shema. Is it clear? Does everyone understand what's happening here? Good. This is very, very important. Fine. Now the Rosh continues with his own words. Where it says in little print, Kuf Tes Zayin or Lamed Zayin. That's where it's the end of the fourth line. V'davar sherogil lios mechusa b'isha. Something, it doesn't mean any part of a body. It's limited to something which is normally covered with respect to a woman. Normally covered. Stop right here. What does it mean, normally covered? What the Rosh is saying is that you do not have to follow the custom in Kabul, where they have to wear burqa, covering their faces, ski masks. No, because it's accepted in our circles. Maybe if you're a Jew living in Kabul, you have a different custom. I don't know. I don't know how many Jews are left there. Hope there aren't too many. But in the rest of the world, where a woman's face is traditionally exposed, there's nothing wrong, says the Rosh, was saying Kriya Shema, if a woman is right in front of you with her whole face exposed.
Wife.
It's your wife.
Oh, that's the wife.
Slow. If it's your wife, there's no prohibition whatsoever. Because after all, you're permitted to look at the beauty. Not you should look at the beauty of your wife. If it's another woman, then you shouldn't really be looking at her beauty, because we're not supposed to look at the beauty of other women. But whether you did or didn't, it has nothing to do with what we call Kriya Shema. In other words, if it would be a part of her body which is exposed, you shouldn't even be saying Shema directly opposite her, even if you're not looking too carefully. With respect to a face, a woman's face, the prohibition doesn't exist. Why? Because it's not rogil lios mechusa b'isha. We have now to the most important question of the night. What is subjective and what is objective? This is the most important question of the whole night tonight. And it's going to be next week's main topic too. What is subjective? Let me change the terms. Objective means it's pure halacha and cannot be changed. Objective. These are objective standards. Subjective means it depends to some extent on local custom. So we said before, the face, unless you're in Afghanistan, it's not a problem, and it does not constitute a problem of tefach v'isha erva, nor does it constitute a problem for the woman herself to walk around with her face exposed. Why should she? She's just no restrictions. How far do you go? Now, just to take the opposite extreme of Kabul, it's a nudist colony. They exist. They exist. Hope no one has ever been there. I hope there's no one in this room who's ever set foot. But they exist. You know, the only nudist colony we had was Gan Eden, before the Chet. But before the Chet was different. We had different Yetzirah. It was a different story. Since then, we cannot accept a nudist colony and say, well, look, that's the way they go around that way. Obviously, that's not, from the Torah's perspective, not allowed. Two of the greatest rabbinic authorities of their time, who both happened to write comments on Rabbeinu Asher, on the Rosh, fight it out. What is subjective and what is objective? Let's first read the Tiferes Shmuel. That's the one closest to the Rosh himself, which is Lamed Zayin. What does it mean, Dover Sharog Elias Mechusa Bisha, which is a problem, as opposed to what? Pirish. Lafuke Mashaderech Noshim Lios Megula. To the exclusion of what's normally uncovered. Kigon. Haponim. Oh, here you go. The face may be exposed. He's very risque. Vahatsavar. Even the neck can be exposed. Not required to wear what they call turtlenecks. You're not required to wear a turtleneck. Vahayodayim. You don't have to wear gloves. That's about all he gives you, though. I'm sorry. He's not very liberal over here. Avol nira ve'ena. This is what Teferish was, one of the greatest rabbinic sages of his day. B'meikil, someone who's lenient. Sheregilos ha'noshim legalos zro, say it. Where they expose their, I'll use the translation, arms. Okay? Zro usually means arm, right? B'yod chazak of a zro on the tuya. We're about to be starting to say v'shmos now. The arm. We'll call it sleeveless, just for convenience sake. Uregilin Leos Pasuach. I'm sorry to be so graphic, but there's no other way to learn Torah. Forgive me. Ad Samach Lidodeha. Samach means near, close. Lidodeha means literally her breasts. Zeo Minigra. This is a bad custom. Vikori Ani Bohem. Those who do it is Chukim Lo Tovim. It's bad law. Vitefach Beisha Erva. What he's saying over here, these are objective. Doesn't matter that everyone's going that way. It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant, according to Teferet Shmuel, as far as either the arms, or we'll call it the chest, I'm not sure what proper word to use, of the woman. It is objective erva and must be covered no matter what the particular custom is in that town. So writes it Teferet Shmuel. Yes, sir?
Why would you call it an objective rule, if he says, why didn't you just say us, sir? What kind of expression is that?
It seems
that it's a more subjective expression than an objective expression.
It seems to me that the whole point of the Teferet Shmuel is that you should not think that it's completely subjective based on the words of the Rosh. That's what I would have said.
I would have thought, reading this, I would have said that the subjective part of that is the Erva is the actual dadeha, and samuch is chukim lo tovim, but not something that you could be
asked. Could be. That's not how I read it. Okay, I read it as being prohibitive. However, but I full disclosure, there's another equally great rabbi, equally great, who writes differently, and that is the Divrei Chamudos, two down, written by one of the most outstanding authorities of his time, the Tosfos Yom Tov, who lived in the 17th century. He seems to take a completely different view. Let's take a look and read what he has to say. It's important to see what it says. We're going to look in Kuf Tes Zayin. He quotes the Rashba, Ponea Yodea Baragleha are excluded. Your face, hands, and feet. What about shoka? What is that? They have a big problem over here. What does the word shok mean? Who wants to give a translation of the word shok?
Thigh.
That's a legitimate translation. Let's take, before we continue in the Divrei Chamudos, let's go back up to the Rosh on the first narrow line. Omer Avchista, he's quoting the Gemara again. Shok, with a little ayin is. Shok, be'isha erev. Now the major question for tonight is, what does shok add to tefach? What does it add? What does it add? It's a very tremendous question. What does it add? We have to know, what does shok add, which is not found in the word tefach? So if you look in the letter ayin, he quotes the Rashba at the end of ayin, in the Madana Yom Tov, right before the pay, komash malon, the afal pi she'eno mokom tsunua be'ish. What it's telling you is that a shok, which we will define later, is not tsunua in a man. A man does not typically cover the shok, but a woman is required to cover the shok. Now, who knows about the styles of the time of the Talmud? Historically, how did they dress? Did they wear gym shorts?
They wore robes.
Right. So what? Talk about men now. What did men? Did men walk around in gym shorts? I don't think so.
But I would say, you know, if you see the typical like picture of the Rambam in a robe and a turban.
Not the Rambam,
too. But I would say that when somebody was working, a man was working, he would take off his robe and he would have some kind of mikvasayim underneath, maybe shorts.
Correct. I think you're completely correct. They wore knee-length shorts. This is true. You look at the pictures, even you'll find this. But often, they rely on rabbis. The pictures indicate that they used to wear these funny. The British used to wear these whatever. They were covered till the knee, approximately, and this is back even many years before. And the calf was exposed. This leads to a very unsettling conclusion that the word shok does not mean the thigh, as Rabbi Freeman said, but rather means the what? The calf. And if you need further evidence. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Hilchos Chalitza. Everyone knows what Chalitza means? Mm-hmm. Right? You may not have ever seen a Chalitza. Mm-hmm. That the woman has to take the shoe off the foot, we'll use that expression for the moment, of the brother-in-law. I've seen Chalitza. And where does the shoe go? It's a sandal. It starts at the very bottom of the foot and goes up till here. It's as far as it goes. And it says in the Shulchan Aruch, you take the sandal off the shok. Whoa. Proof number two, that shok seems to mean the calf and not the thigh. It sounds like very bad news, but sometimes bad news turns into good news. Well, but patience. Okay, let's now go back to the bottom, to the Divrei Chamudos. Very critical citation. The last four lines in column one. Shoka eino bichlal ragleha. Apparently the shok, however defined, is not included in the word regel, because shok is, you know, some special status, as he wrote in Madar Yadav earlier. V'im kein, gam zro se'a, einon bichlal yodeha. So if the shok is not part of the foot, so the zro is not part of the hand. This leaves us in very bad news. So far it looks to me that he's saying, like in Me'esharim, yes, the woman has to cover till the ankle until the wrist. That's my simple read so far of the Divrei Chamudos. But look at the punchline. Umistaber, it makes sense. Last two lines. The chomakom umakom lefimin hago. Yes, it's true. The Talmud rules that she has to dress down to the ankle and down to the wrist. But that's only in the times of the Talmud, because that was the custom then. But if the custom would change, the law might change. What she's normally goes exposed is not considered erva. Why? Typical euphemism. Because if it's usually exposed, it will not lead to, I want to substitute a word for the word v'chule, the word would be hirur, or immorality, or bad thoughts. Came in the rogel behu, because it's normal for him. Ukid l'kamon, Gabe Kol the Seir. With respect to Kol and Seir, whatever you're used to is not a problem. What do you mean used to? What are you used to? He hasn't said anything. We'll get to that a little bit later, what used to means. Kol means a voice, and Seir means a hair. Once we hear, thank you, Rabbi. Well, let's just finish reading the text on top of the rush. Thank you for your good point. We should translate everything. The last two lines of the Russian Siman Lamazayim, once we hear it. Kol b'isha erva. The woman's voice is considered erva. As it says, ki kol eich orev, a very famous pasuk in Shira Shirin. Pirush, lishmoa, to hear. V'lo le'inyan kriyashma. Has nothing whatsoever, although it's in the Gemara about kriyashma, has nothing to do with kriyashma. What does that mean? That means if you want to say shma, and a woman is singing, say Shema. Try to tune out from her song. But it does not propose an impediment to your recitation of the Shema. That's what he understands. And if you look carefully in Oz Pei, Tehekelu Kriya Shema Lefamim Kedei Shelo Yavo, etc. If you don't allow him to say Shema when the woman's voice is singing, he may not be able to say Shema at all. There's certain parts of the world where the women are always singing. You're not going to be able to say the Shema. So they gave a leniency to say Shema, even though a woman's voice can be heard. This is very important for the following reason. There are certain individuals who misunderstood, this we made brief reference to this last week, we were speaking last week about a woman serving as a chazanit for Kabbalat Shabbat, if you recall that discussion. So the issue was Kol B'Isha Erva. I said there are some who misinterpreted that Kol B'Isha Erva is not a problem, it's only as reference to Shema. What does it mean, only as reference to Shema? So, there were those who claim, in contrast to the Rosh, that Kol B'Isha Erva has to do with Shema. What do you mean, it has to do with Shema? Take a look at the top of column 2 of the Divrei Chamudos, the first line. Lo linyan kriya Shema. Avol ha-Mordechai Kosav. The Mordechai was another great scholar of the 13th century, contemporary of the Rosh, both students of the Meirami Rutenberg. B'shem Rabbeinu Hai, who's from the Gaon of 1,000 years ago plus, to call Hani le'inyan Kriya Shema. This refers to Kriya Shema. And Kol Zemer, the next line, Afilu Ishta Erva, even your own wife is singing, you're not supposed to say Shema when your wife is singing. And the Shulchan Aruch says, Eshti Zara B'Kriya Shema. Dafka Kol Zemer, if she's singing, as opposed to if she's talking. Fine. Why? Because Kol Aragilbo. Kol Aragilbo might either mean a voice you're used to or a speaking voice, as the case may be. To those who misinterpreted this to mean that the entire restriction of Kol Isha is limited to when you're saying the Shema. And therefore, there's nothing wrong with going to a shul or at a concert hall and hearing a woman singing. Why not? You're not saying Shema. It's only Kabbalat Shabbat. No problem. This is a misread of the Mordechai. All the Mordechai said was that it relates to Shema insofar as there is a particular prohibition to say the Shema when the woman's voice is being heard. This is not to deny that there exists a prohibition against hearing the singing voice of a woman, even in the absence of a Shema. I repeat again. The Rosh said, the Shema, not Krishma. Nothing to do with Krishma. It's just you're not allowed to hear the woman's voice singing, because it's erotic, as the case may be. But, nothing to do with Shema. And the Mordechai adds, of course it's prohibited all the time, but there's an additional level of prohibition that you shouldn't say the Shema if a woman's voice is audible. That's all. So this is the source of that mystery. That's just as an aside. Our final line. Omer Rav Sheshes, this is the end of the Rosh. Seyar b'isha erva. A woman's hair is considered erva. What's this? Who? What woman? The last line in the Rosh Laman Zion. Pirish. Kuf Yotes. B'noshim shedarko l'chaso sara. Women who are accustomed to cover their hair. Avo b'sulo, single women. They go with their hair uncovered. Mutter likros kinegdon. There's nothing wrong with saying the Shema if a single woman is right in front of you and her hair is uncovered. This concludes the Rosh Simen Lamed Zayin. We understand? There are four prohibitions consecutively in the Talmud. Tefach, Shok, Kol, Seir. Okay? A tefach is the size of a fist. A shok is a certain part of the leg, which we'll discuss soon the details. Kol is the voice, singing voice, and Seir is the hair of a married woman. This is it. This is the whole. That's all we're doing. Just this. Let's analyze, however, much in greater depth what we're talking about. We seem to have a dispute between the Teferet Shmuel, as I understood him, and the Divrei Chamudos, as I understood him, as to whether there is an objective or subjective with respect to the parts of a woman's body. The Teferet Shmuel says, yes, if her face and her neck and her hands is no problem. I assume you include the feet as well, although he doesn't mention it explicitly. But other parts, for example, the Zeruah, and Zeruah is a hard word to translate again. Does it mean the forearm? Does it mean the upper arm? He doesn't say. And he talks about the chest. These are considered to be, in my view, in his understanding, objective. The Divrei Chamudos, in his discussion of the extremities, he doesn't discuss the body of the woman, he discusses the extremities. He says, gives you an impression that the extremities go to the very bottom, till the ankle, until the wrist, but then he turns around and says, it's subjective, and it seems to be able to change. So who's right? Now, I don't like to take sides too often, but I want to give you my opinion for whatever it's worth. We asked a question before, a serious question, which we saw explicitly written over here. Why must it say shok? It already said tefach. What's unique about shok? So the Rashba answered, we saw, it's not unique. It's just telling you, don't make a mistake and think that a woman may expose her shok since men typically expose the shok. No. Men typically expose, women typically don't expose, and therefore for a woman, it's prohibited, even though a man would go around with it exposed. That's the Rashba's answer. It's answer number one. There are two additional answers which the Prima Gadim has, but you can see them both in the Shulchan Aruch. Let's turn the side of the page. We're now, it's less than perfect copy, but it'll have to do. Okay. The Shulchan Aruch begins. Ayin Hey Aleph. Tefach Magula Beisha B'Mokma Shadaka L'Chasoso Afila Hu Ishto Also Likras Kriyashma Kaneg. It's the Gemara with the Rosh, even your own wife. Ramah. V'yesh Omrin Dafka Beishto do you have up to a Tefach? Abo Beisha Acheres Afilu Pochos Mi Tefach Havi Erva. Another woman who's not your wife, even less than a Tefach is a problem. Why? Because that's how they understand the word Shok. Remember, Tefach is Ishto, is your wife. Only your own wife, you have up to a Tefach with no problem to say the Shema. But if it's any other woman in the whole wide world, except for your wife, even less than a Tefach is a problem. So the word Shok, according to this understanding, is a code word. What it really means is, another woman other than your wife. I repeat, your wife, you have a Tefach, grace. Another woman, not. And the word shok represents that second position. Yes, sir?
When you mention your wife, does that also include your mother and your sister?
Oh, okay. Since you're asking an excellent question. What about your mother? What about your sister, etc.? In my humble opinion, your mother and your sister is no problem. It's no problem. Why is that so? Because the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination for incestuous relationships, was removed. Removed at the beginning of the Second Temple. So, assume that it's removed from all of us, we don't have to worry. If someone, unfortunately, has somehow recreated it, as we see it too many times, then of course it's a problem. But for the average individual, I think it's not a problem. This is, okay. Now, if you take a look in the Mishnah Brura, so it's not completely clear, Os Zion, which is about the 6th or 7th wide line, Pachos Mitefach, V'im HaShok Megula, if the shok, however defined, is Megula, if it is exposed, so Yesh Omrim, some say that even Pachos Mitefach V'ishto was prohibited. Why? Shumakum Hirur Yoser Mishari Varim. Yet a third interpretation of the word shok. Not, as the Rashba said, it's teaching you that it's, even though the men expose it, the women may not. Not that it's a code word for another woman who's not your wife. No, even your own wife. Because the shok, however defined, is a place which is more arousing than other parts of the body that are being discussed in this particular section of Shulchan Aruch. Three interpretations. You with me? Three. Either it means, one more time, either it means a part that the men typically expose, or it means another woman, not your wife. Or it means the shok of a defined is part of the foot, the leg, which is particularly arousing. So therefore the tefach does not apply. So all three are explaining to us why the word tefach has to have shok supplementing it. For another woman and not your wife, you don't have a tefach. If it's that particular part of the foot, you don't have a tefach. Or it's just telling you that part of the body is included in erva, even though men expose it. Three answers. I have a fourth answer. I think my answer is better than all three. A little bit chutzpah on my part. Who wants to give the fourth answer? Come on, give it. What's the fourth answer? The fourth answer is that although other parts of the body is purely subjective, here it's objective. The face is subjective. The hands, however defined, is subjective. The feet are subjective. Once you encroach on the boundary, wherever it may happen to be, of zroa or shok, we're talking about shok in particular in our Gemara, that's objective. How come nobody gives that answer? I say, because it's not true. That's why it's not good. Had it been true, someone would have thought of this answer long before me. What a great answer it is. Therefore, I am partial to the opinion of the Divrei Chamudos, that it's subjective, and opposed to the Teferes Shmuel, who says it's objective. Now, of course, the Teferes Shmuel has major ally, Mishnah Berurah himself. Let me show it to you. Although, the Mishnah Berurah has a different definition. Let's take a look. Okay. We're going to see a very important line over here. The Mishnah Berurah, in contrast to what I said, has a different view. We're going to start Beis. Beis is the last few narrow lines. I'm sorry, it's a little bit... I'm not such a good copier, but okay. Actually, the truth is... I don't think I... Did I copy this? I probably did. It was me. My fault. Okay, not so good, but did the best we could. Beis. Avoponeo viodeo. Her face and her hands. When the minig is, shederach lios megula vosa mokom. V'chein beparasos regel. Her foot. Ad hashok. And he tells you where the borderline is. Brackets. V'ad hamokom shenikra. Who wants to say the next word?
Knee.
Isn't that nice? K-N-E-E. Kuf nun yud aleph kini b'lshon Ashkenaz in Yiddish, right? B'mokom shedarkan leilech yochef. If they go that way till the knee, mutol likros kenegda. How do you like that? If it's normal to go and exposed till the knee, it's okay. But the next line, because it's rogel behen, he's used to it, and a boladei here. But if they normally cover it, shiur and tefach k'moshar gufa isha. So writes the Mishnah Berurah. There's a leniency, right? He went up from the ankle to the knee. Hey, that's pretty big. That's big. That's very big. Of course, the problem will become. Let's go a little bit further. Oh, excellent question. When I was a kid, they used to fight. Is the knee included? Or is the knee not included? That fight's been resolved, as most things have been resolved strictly in the last 40 years or 50 years. But when I was a kid, they were still fighting about this. I have a proof that the knee is not included in the word shok. So there. Who wants to know my proof? Maybe about Kari? A pasuk in Chumash. Not some obscure source. A pasuk in the Torah HaKadosh, the five books of Moses. You have to know where you find these expressions in the five books of Moses. It's only found once to my knowledge. It's found in the Tochacha. It talks about the Shechin, which will be Al HaBirkayim V'Al HaShokayim. It will be on your knee and on your shok. Indicating they're two separate things. So according to Mishnah Berurah, the shok is the thigh. I claim that the knee is not part of that thigh. Of course, the problem is, I think the shok is a calf, so that's not going to be helpful. But according to the Mishnah Berurah, I wanted to suggest, contrary to what's accepted today, that the knee is not part of the shok. Fine. Here's the most important line, the next line. The Mishnah Berurah, you know, the truth is he gives us a little leniency, but he comes back with a vengeance. Avo, Zroa Vishoka, second line, Afilu Regilin Lelech Megulo Kederach HaPerutzos. Everyone goes with exposing the arm or the shoulder, as he defines it, the thigh. Also, objective. Who said so? Hey is the source on the bottom. El Yeraba, Rokeach, Nechem Muchach, Beksubis, Shtuhu Das Yehudis. It's true. The Gemara tells us that a woman who goes with her Zeroa Megula, with her arm exposed, forfeits her Ksuba. The man can divorce her without paying her entire sum of money. You know why? She's in violation of Das Yehudis. And the Mishnah Berurah assumes that it's unchanging, it's objective. This to me is against both Rashi and the Rambam. Rashi in Ksuba says that Das Yehudis is the custom of the Jewish women. And we'll discuss next week's topic is much hotter than this week's. Next week's topic is about married women covering their hair. So for those who know, who want to look it up in advance, I recommend that you read three articles in Tradition. Tradition is you can get it online. It's a magazine of the Rabbinical Council of America. An article by Rabbi Michael Broyd, with a back and forth with Rabbi Eliezer Baruch Shulman and Rabbi Broid responding. That's going to be the, I'm not going to copy it.
It's enough time to read it.
That's right. Oh. Rabbi Broid's article is 80 pages, the original. And then they go back and forth another 50 pages at least, I think. So you have some free time. You can download it and spend some time reading it. It's very good reading. So that'll be next week. But so it's going to be critical for next week. But here, Das Yehudis means, in my opinion, that it can change. He assumes, Mr. Brewer, it cannot change. What can we do? It's a dispute. Okay. Let's just put it on the table. This is my view on this matter. Will you tell me that in my view, that it's more likely that the shulk really means the calf? And the only way to defend the Jewish women, this is what happens. There's a saying called the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish starts off, hey, Chazon Ish, great rabbi. He starts off by saying, from all the evidence, that the shulk means the calf. And by the way, if you think the evidence can only be marshaled from, we'll call it, more quote Haredi sources, as if Shulchan Aruch says so, it's B'dum Chalitza Shul. You look at the more modern sources, the Das Mikra, which is the scholarly interpretations of the Tanakh. They also say that the word Shulk means the calf. In the context of Sefer Shoftim, with Shimshon, all story, they say that that's what it means. That's what it meant in the original Hebrew. Then how do we defend what goes on even in Bnei Brak? The women, you know, they cover till the knee, and that's it. You mean to tell me they wear stockings? So could a woman go with stockings from top to bottom? Oy, 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 oy. No way! They're not wearing opaque stockings. So those who wear opaque stockings, that's Mea Sharm all over again. Instead of wearing a dress, they're wearing opaque stockings. And they have to show it's opaque, they have that little seam that everyone can see. But even in Bnei Brak, they're wearing sheer stockings. It's not a problem. And we assume it's permissible, so the Chazanish got stuck. So because he got stuck, he started to back out and say that shulk must mean, even though there seems so much evidence that it means the thigh, it's untenable, it means the calf, it must mean the thigh. Now, Binyamin Zilber, who was a great tzaddik who passed away last year, said that he went to the Chazanish to try to talk him out of it. How can you go against the proof that you yourself brought? And he says that he sort of gave in to him a little bit, you know, I wasn't privy to that conversation. In my view, no, it means the calf, but the Derech HaMudas is correct. In places where the calf is covered, they must be covered. That includes Mea Shearim and other parts of the world, Williamsburg, I guess. But in other parts of the world where the women only cover, you know, till the high up, till the knee, let's say, then that does no longer apply, because it depends upon the custom and every time and place. Yes, what's your question?
When the Torah uses the word shulk for a carbon,
that's an animal.
Yeah, it's an animal, but like an animal has a thigh and a calf also, and like I don't think it means calf over there.
Does not, certainly does not. That's a whole point of the Chazon Ish. It means something different for an animal, different for you. That's exactly the point he makes. Okay? Mishnayos and all this, the whole, it's not that fanatic going into all the details. Is everyone with me so far? So I, on the one hand, I'm the strictest, and on the other hand, I'm the most lenient. I'm the strictest with the way I understand it. The shulk goes, has to be, just the evidence. Shulk has to be the calf. On the other hand, as you know me for so many years, I'm always trying to defend the Jewish woman. Always trying to defend the Jewish woman. So therefore, my only defense is that the Divrei Chamudas is correct. What's my proof that it's correct? That nobody gave the fourth answer. The fourth answer was better than the other three. None of them is so fatty-tatty, those three answers. Not so great. Mine is much better. That Zro and Shok is what? Objective. And the rest, whatever you want to part about the hands, the feet, the face, is subjective. But no one gave that answer. Because I think it's because it's not true. And that's how I understand Das Yehudis to mean subjective, which can change. Which is against the Mishnah Berurah on both points. I know it's not everyone agrees with me, but I think the Divrei Chamudas is clear, saying the way I said it. And I want to add something. The Divrei Chamudas is saying with respect to Kriya Shema, which is the man's problem. If you look in the Sefer Kaf HaChaim, you have a Kaf HaChaim here somewhere in the library? I think we do. I'm not sure exactly where it is. The Kaf HaChaim in Siman Ayin Hei says, not only is it permissible for a man to say Shema in those situations, but it's permissible in the first instance for the woman to expose it. So the woman is permitted, according to the Kaf HaChaim, to expose whatever part of the Zroah and Shok are normally exposed in that time and place. But I have a very important caveat. And I'm going to scream this from the rooftops. Whatever we're saying over here is limited to what we call the extremities. The extremities. This is the Zeroa, the Shok, as we just defined them. However, as the Rambam puts it, Kol Guf Ha'isha Erva, which means, I'll use the word torso. The torso of the woman, it seems to me, is objective erva. Otherwise, if you're not going to allow an absolute nudist colony, because you'll say, well, the Mokum Erva itself, the genitals, that's certainly a problem, but then you'll say, as long as she covers that, so everything else can just be completely exposed. To me, that's incredible, impossible. And therefore, the way I slice it is that the torso, the guf, as Rama puts it, is absolute erva, objective, and that's not going to change, it cannot change. Whereas the extremities is zero on the shoulder, which the Gemara speaks. There, we have the idea of it being more subjective. That's my view on this matter. That's why I'm extremely upset that women who should know better are exposing parts of their actual bodies in a manner which I feel is completely unacceptable. Now, where's the borderline? Where's the border between the... Well, we allow the neck, right? So where's the border between the neck and the torso? Where is it? I'll give you my view. The collarbone. You see the collarbone? Everyone feel, you can feel it. It's very, very hard. It's right over here. Seems to me that till the collarbone is part of the neck, seems to me, and once you pass that, you're ready in Guf Ha'isha land. Now, we can still justify with difficulty if a little bit is exposed. A little bit. Because it's Tefach. We could say two things. Number one, that Tefach applies even to that part of the body, which is hardly questionable, because one can argue that's almost as bad as the others who said Shok. This may be worse than Shok. Okay? And number two, we can theorize that Tefach is not only permissible to say Shema, but also permissible to be uncovered in the first instance. Not two are not necessarily the same. On the second issue, we have a proof from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in his Tshuvos that a woman is supposed to cover her hair, but she may, not just the Shema, she may expose a Tefach of her hair. Tefach by Tefach. So for example, if a woman wants to keep some hair open in the front, and the typical woman has her a forehead approximately two tefachim across, you can feel yourself, don't trust me. Okay, yeah. So then she can keep hair up, exposed, a half a tefach. Because two times a half is one times one. That's what Moshe writes in his tshuva, which is a chiddush. He gets petulant from the Hasidic, they don't like it at all, they're screaming at him. But Moshe was the God of Adar. So that's what he says. So I'm just giving you my take on these matters. It's clear to me that whenever we talk about anything, we're talking about the borders. The border, whatever, if the border of the shulk is here or here, it's a border. You can't, a woman cannot go, okay, I'll go like this and expose, like I have this, some kind of funny actress, I'm not sure her name is, or something, who keeps something over and over here. I'm sure it's some kind of a style. That's prohibited. Even less than a tefach. Because that's in the middle. Yes, Eddie?
So if you go by the border argument, that even if we agree with you and we say that the shulk is the bottom part,
right.
And then you still have a tefach over the knee that you could expose.
Slowly. So let's go slowly.
He said that the calf ends at the knee, including the knee.
If you're going to assume that the calf is the shoke, and you're going to assume that it's objective,
right.
You're sunk. Because above it, it's even worse. Not better.
No.
You know what this is called? It's called Yerek.
You're saying it's subjective. You're saying that you're allowed to expose your calf because it's subjective. Correct.
Again,
so now you're asking
a good question.
Now we have the border. Now you can go half a tefach into the border.
Depends where the border is. And here we have to be very clear on this matter. I did not come here to relax the standards of modesty in Riverdale, New York.
You're making a good point.
I'm here to try to enhance and uphold as many standards as I can. You know that I try to always, what we call, be malamed tzchus, to try to find some way to defend the custom of Jewish women, even if they're not doing what I want them to do. I've always tried my best. At the same time, it seems to me, especially in the world that we inhabit, it's critical and crucial that there be an emphasis on tznius for both women and for men. For women and how they present themselves, and for men, what they look at. I'm not discriminating between the genders. Both have to be more careful in today's world. What's today's world? You know, the Gemara tells us, Haroa Sota Bikilkula, someone who sees a sota, an adulterous woman, Yazir Atzmo Minayayin, should not drink wine. That's where the two are next to each other in Parshas Nasa. We live in a world, unfortunately, where the most serious violations, even of adultery, exist. And it pains me to say, it exists not only in the Jewish community, but even in what we'll call, for better lack of a better term, the Torah or Orthodox community. It exists. Because some of the tough questions end up in my bezdin or in my desk. Very serious problems. In such a generation, we have to be more scrupulous than we could find a defense for in terms of both what the women are presenting and what the men are looking at. Both. But now to go back to your question. You asked me an excellent question and it's hard for me to answer it. If I claim that it's subjective, what do I say about, cap sleeves? What's wrong with cap sleeves? One of my rabbinic colleagues, whose name I will not mention because it was only told to me by his Talmud who heard it, although I trust the Talmud, said, look, he's not recommending cap sleeves, he's opposed to cap sleeves, but in case this whole society wears cap sleeves, so you cannot prohibit it completely. Which means, the sleeve is up to here, so the whole body is covered. It's just the arm. That is a natural outgrowth of what I've been saying. Although I hesitate to say it because it's such a leniency. But strictly speaking, this Rav is probably correct. Slow. How's that? Good. I'm not recommending that. Please don't misunderstand me. I recommend that women wear sleeves that they always wore, which means they wear sleeves to the elbow. Do you have to cover the elbow? In my opinion, the answer to that question is no. But they'll shoot me in certain places, so I don't say it too loud. Okay? You want me to be shot, Charlie? No, you want me to be shot?
You're being paid.
Yeah.
I'm just arguing. I'm not arguing for capsules. I'm just saying that once you draw the line at the elbow,
right,
you now have a tefa past that to go into.
That's the next leniency, which I don't necessarily subscribe to. That even after you're going to be subjective, you still have a tefa in the first instance. That's not necessarily the case. It could be you have a tefa with respect to Kriyashma, but not with respect to the first instance. The tefa plus. You want to combine all the leniencies together. I'm not sure you can. I'm not sure you can.
I like miniskirts.
So that's my next question. What about miniskirts? Yes, I'm sorry.
The bottom line, how long should a woman...
Okay, here we go. Miniskirts. Yeah, miniskirts. Rav Avadi Yosef was a very famous tshuva about miniskirts. In Yechava Das. It was the rage...
60s.
In the 60s, right? So I'm talking about the 70s. Let's say 40 years ago, there was a rage called miniskirts. And Rav Avadi writes, and it's true, he's not permitting anything. He's just giving what he calls the lesser of the two evils. He permits that they should allow the women in the schools to wear pants rather than wear miniskirts. I happen to agree completely.
Yes.
It was outrageous. Okay. Now you want to know what's so outrageous? If we're going to suggest that there's some subjectivity built in. So the answer is, we already had something which I believe we have to accept, at least in principle, even if we're not accepting it as the proper interpretation of the word shok. We don't know. The three of them, we're not sure which one of them is right. The Mishnah Berurah, if you recall, here taught us, with respect to shok, that it's a mokum hearer more than other parts of the body. That's what we saw over here, if you recall. That, let me find the exactly right place. Oh, Zion, on the seventh wide line here on this page. Even why? Now, if he's, remember, in Ishtabura speak, the shok is the thigh. I think it's correct to say that the thigh, especially the parts of the thigh, would be considered a more arousing to the male than, for example, the woman's upper arm. Now, we haven't done studies on these things scientifically, but speaking as a part of the male part of the human race, I would subscribe that it's true. From the average man can be more aroused or attracted or distracted, as the case may be, by the woman's thigh than by the woman's upper arm. Kamirali, I've never taken any scientific polls. And therefore, it seems to me that appropriateness is what's critical. And in today's world, it seems to me that the appropriate thing is that the women should cover their thighs and cover their knees, even if, technically speaking, it doesn't help to cover the entire shoulder, which goes down to here. And if it's subjective, in certain places they're covering less, not an al machna. We have to try to do the best we can to be more careful rather than less careful in terms of our standards of tznius. That's my answer to your question. Okay. Now, this leads us, and I'm going to end momentarily, I don't want to go late. This leads us to a very, very critical question, which is going to be the theme of next Motzei Shabbos this year, which is, what is the halachic status of a married woman covering her hair? Is that subjective or objective? Big difference. What happens if all the women of that particular location, even if they're married, don't cover their hair? And don't tell me there's no such place. Don't tell me there's no such place. We live in this, we might say, compared to the generation past, we live in a very good time. I don't like to write revisionist history. I always try to confront reality. Let me tell you, when I moved, and I have time, I can measure time, not because my memory is so good, but I know when I moved from place to place. So my family moved to Kew Garden Hills in Queens in 1958. That was before my mitzvah, but I still remember some things. And I remember that we moved in the big shul, which was a shul then of 400 members. Shul is still, thank God, there. The biggest shul in the neighborhood. The Beit Midrash is still the biggest in population. It's one of the biggest in terms of the edifice. Huge shul. We lived around the corner from that shul. A wonderful Rav, who's, I'm told, not stepping down, but a wonderful Rav has been rabbi there for close to 60 years. A very, very distinguished Rav. There were two women who covered their hair. The Rebbetzin and one other woman. I'm telling you this, I'm not boasting. I'm not saying it's the right thing to do. I'm giving you facts. That's how it was. Of course, in shul, everybody covered their hair in shul. Everyone, they would bring it with their hats or this or that. But in the street, didn't happen. I'm just giving you a reality check. I'm old enough to give you that kind of a reality check. Now, things have gotten much better. Many, many, many more women today than two generations ago, 50 years ago, are covering their hair. Many more. And the question is, the fact that the women did not cover their hair in such large numbers, something which is noted by as great an authority as the Aruch HaShulchan, who was the greatest rabbinic authority of his time, who lived in Navardak, was a great Lithuanian rabbi, and he, in the middle of this siman, right over here, because if you look at, let's just get a little head start, the next page, Seir Shalisha, just for a minute, this is the second column of this page, Seir Shalisha Shedarko Lechasoso Osu Likros Kenegdo. I feel a wish though, very important. If your wife is not required to cover her hair in the privacy of the home, but if you want to say Birchas Hamazon, you want a bench, and she's sitting right opposite you, either you have to turn to the side, or she has to cover her hair, or something has to give.
Or any bracha.
I'm giving Birchas Hamazon as an example. Aval Besulos, single women, Shadakon Le'elech Pruos Harosh, Mutter, no problem. No problem if she's a single woman. Now the problem, of course, becomes... I'm sorry?
Single woman never married?
Basula means a single woman never married. That's a literal translation. Right? Literal translation. And the question, of course, becomes, well, what happens if there are individuals who live in a community where no one covers their hair? We'll end with this quote, and we'll see next week. We'll analyze it more carefully. The last narrow line, read together. Vidaut dafilu im derech ishezo. If the way of this particular woman, V'chavero seha ba'osa mokum. And all of her female friends in that town. Leilech begilui arosh bashuk kederech haputos. Married women are uncovering the hair in the street. Asur. It's prohibited. It's prohibited. Why? Next line. Kevan shetzrichos lechasas arosaros mitzaradin. She's required to cover her hair. Brackets. V'yesh b'zeh isur Torah. A woman who goes, a married woman with her hair uncovered in the street, is in violation of a Torah prohibition. Midichsiv. Upora es rosh ha'isha. When the parasha of Sota, the Kohen will uncover her hair. Michlal the ha'isa mechusa. That before that was covered. And then he says, V'gam kol b'nos Yisrael ha'machzikas b'das Moshe. All Jewish women who follow the law of Moses. Nizhoros b'zeh mimosa v'oseinu me'olam v'arata. They've always covered their hair. I'm not sure where he's writing. He lived in Lithuania, and Aruch HaShulchan lived in Lithuania. They're describing two completely different realities. I don't know. So therefore he says it's prohibited. This is the view of the Mishnah Berurah. Not only is it prohibited for the woman to go with the hair uncovered, but it's prohibited to say the Shema or Birchas HaMazon or any bracha if the woman is with her hair exposed. Which of course can create tremendous problems if you're going somewhere at some kind of a public place and there were women who are not covering their hair and you want to say a bracha, so you have a serious problem. A major problem. What do you do? There's a discussion which is not for our topic right now. Is it enough to close your eyes or do you have to turn around? That's a men's problem. Right? But we're more concerned with the woman. What is her obligation to cover her hair? And is there any defense for all those hundreds, thousands of women who kept Shabbos and who kept Kashrus and even and who dressed with very, very appropriately, but the one exception that they didn't cover their hair? Can we defend, at least post facto, the practice of these Jewish women? Tune in next month to Shabbos and find out. Shavua Tov. Yeah.